Welcome to Big Book Awakening, the West End Club, Saturday morning women's Big Book study. Thanks for coming today. On this day, the goal of this meeting is to increase our individual knowledge of the book Alcoholics Anonymous by listening to two members who deal with one chapter in depth. I'm Barb. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Barb.
I'm Julie. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Julie.
So today we're talking about Chapter 3, more about alcoholism. My favorite part, I think, of this chapter is the first couple of paragraphs. And we used to read this at one of my meetings. Joe and Charlie talked about how you don't start a math course in Chapter 5 with equations and that kind of stuff. That you start it in Chapter 1 with simple addition, and then you can move on. So the readings we used to do at this meeting were still Chapter 3, this part of Chapter 3, and this definitely is still Step 1. Most of us have been unwilling to admit that we were real alcoholics. No person likes to think he is bodily and mentally different from his fellows. Therefore, it is not surprising that our drinking careers have been characterized by countless vain attempts to prove we could drink like other people. The idea that somehow, someday, he will control and enjoy his drinking is the great obsession of every abnormal drinker. The persistence of this illusion is astonishing. Many pursue it into the gates of insanity or death. What my sponsor did with me fairly early on, after I'd been through a few of the steps and thought that things should be getting better, she told me that I need to reread this paragraph and substitute think for drink. So let me do that one time here. No person likes to think she is bodily and mentally different from her fellows. Therefore, it is not surprising that our thinking careers have been characterized by countless vain attempts to prove we could think like other people. The idea that somehow, someday, she will control and enjoy her thinking is the great obsession of every abnormal thinker. The persistence of this illusion is astonishing. Many pursue it into the gates of insanity or death. And for me, what Chapter 3 does is it gives me examples of not just having a drinking problem, but of having a thinking problem. If my problem were just drinking, I could just stop drinking. I mean, if I have an allergy to seafood, I stop eating seafood. It's not a big deal. Maybe I'll relapse once in a while and then get really sick and I won't do it again. But I'm not going to be thinking about drinking or thinking about seafood five times a day, every day. And more about alcoholism, there's some great stories. So there's no such thing. physicians who are familiar with alcoholism agree there is no such thing as making a normal drinker out of an alcoholic. Science may one day accomplish this, but it hasn't done so yet. I have one sponsee who was working on a reduced alcohol intake kind of method, and she did that. You know, I mean, she did that for a year. This is a program. I mean, she paid money to be in this program. I'm sorry she's not here to talk to you about it. But I'm working with her now, and of course, you know, she's on the wagon for sure. But making a normal drinker out of an alcoholic, I think, does not happen. I mean, I didn't want to say goodbye to 12-year-old Jamesons forever, but you know, having been with the program for 8 years now, it's not so hard. It's a lot better on this side of the drink. Here, if anyone who is showing inability to control their drinking can do the right about face and drink like a gentlewoman, our hats are off. But it doesn't happen. I love all these methods we've tried. I tried a bunch of these. I tried drinking scotch only because I didn't like scotch that much, you know, I like Irish whiskey. And I tried drinking Guinness only for a while, but I got to be like Dr. Bob. We were reading about him last week. I got so fat. I love it. Switching from scotch to brandy, drinking only natural wine. I could only drink wine when I was abroad. I could not drink American wine because of the sulfite. So when I was traveling, I just never put down the wine bottle. And at home, I never lifted it. I loved drinking. When I was drinking, I loved drinking. I thought it was the best thing to be doing. I didn't like waking up the next day, but I loved drinking while I was doing it. And not in moderation, never in moderation. I think that's alcohol abuse when people can have just one drink and walk away. Now, maybe there was a chance that we could have walked away from drinking early. Page 32, I doubt it. Man of 30 was doing spree drinking, all right? And this guy was able to stop completely on his own. So he made up his mind to be successful. Now he stayed sober for 25 years, and I look at this. He retired at the age of 55. Most of us retire at 65. This guy couldn't wait to get that bottle, you know. And then in a few years, skids gone. It's all gone. It's over. And so we can't hold off for 25 years and think that we can pick it up later. The disease is progressive. There is no question. If I start drinking now after 8 years without a drink, I'm not going to be where I was 8 years ago. I'm going to be where I would be if I had continued drinking for this 8 years. It would not be pretty. Staying sober for a little while doesn't work. Young folks, and it's good to see young folks here. I mean, it's nice that, you know, we're not a bunch of old men smoking cigarettes in a dirty room, you know what I mean? that you can get this early, you can find out early that you better do something about it, that you have enough. So to be gravely affected, yeah, you don't have to drink a long time or take some of the quantities that some of us had. And most of us have gone on drinking beyond the years. I mean, we wouldn't be here if we hadn't drank for too long. So the question, on 34, the question is how to stop altogether. And this is why we're still on step one, because in step one, what they're hammering home is our powerlessness. And here they're offering another, maybe a person can stop on a basis other than a spiritual basis. I haven't seen it yet in my experience. And obviously the writers of the book didn't either. How do we explain to people, how do we let people think about how whether they're one of us or not, about whether they have this disease of uncontrolled drinking? We're going to describe some, and these are some of my favorites. My first example, a friend called Jim, charming fellow. Told him what we knew of alcoholism and the answer we had found. He made a beginning. His family was reestablished. He began to work as a salesman for the business he had lost through drinking. All went well for a time, but he failed to enlarge his spiritual life. So what I'm thinking here is that he maybe accepted the first part of step one. He maybe accepted he was powerless over alcohol. I don't think he got to the second half of step one, which was that his life was unmanageable. So Jim goes to work on Tuesday, and that's another, where was he on Monday, Jim? and he's irritated that he was a salesman for a company he once owned. And then he feels hungry. You know, I love that. Hungry, angry, lonely, tired, that we all learned. So hunger, that vague feeling that you need something inside, doesn't always have to be hunger for food, at least not for alcoholics. And then he sits down and he orders the milk. And the reason I love this story was because for 30 years of my life, I would start at Thanksgiving and I would start making eggnog. And I would make my eggnog with a fifth of bourbon and a half a pint of rum, a big gabon of it, and then let it sit until it was ready to distribute at Christmas time. It was the best stuff you've ever drank. It was delicious. So, you know, people think whiskey and milk sounds horrible. I think it sounds great. And you know, it's the thought had occurred to me a few times, too, that if I had my whiskey and milk, it would be fine. Because milk is good for us, right? And the experiment went so well, I ordered another whiskey and poured it into more milk. So, one more journey. He had much knowledge about himself as an alcoholic, yet all reasons for not drinking were easily pushed aside in favor of the foolish idea that he could take whiskey if only he mixed it with milk. So whatever the precise definition of the word may be, we call this plain insanity. And this is the insanity. You know, in step two, they talk about came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. The insanity they talk about in this book over and over again is the insanity of taking a first drink. Because we know we cannot take a first drink. If I take a first drink, my allergy kicks in. And that first drink is just the key to 10,000 more. And who knows if I'll ever get back to a recovery again. So that's where our sanity, our need for sanity comes from. I need to have something that comes between me and the first drink. And these are the examples they're giving us for why we need this. In some circumstances, we have gone out deliberately to get drunk, feeling ourselves justified by nervousness, anger, worry, depression, jealousy. Like, mostly I was ticked off at someone. You know, when I went out on a bender, usually I just sat and drank at home. But even in this kind of beginning, we're obliged to admit that our justification for a spree was insanely insufficient in the light of what always happened. So there is always for us going to be total insanity associated with taking any first drink. And the only way to cure that insanity, I mean, we can't think our way out of it. We have to pick up a phone and call a friend. we have to have a power greater than ourselves that we can rely on. That power takes all kinds of forms for us as we go through this. And I love this. Our behavior is as absurd and incomprehensible with respect to the first drink as that of an individual that Julie's going to talk to you about now.
I'll take it away. All right. Like I said, this whole, like Barb said, this whole thing is about our powerlessness. And I have to admit, I feel like I was meant to do the second half because I laughed my ass off about the jaywalker. And that's just typically me. And that's me not drinking, too. So it is definitely a thinking thing. So I'm going to start out by reading. Yes, you all, I'm going to read. And, okay, so this is at the bottom, the last paragraph of page 37, more about alcoholism. Our behavior is as absurd and incomprehensible with respect to the first drink as that of an individual with a passion, say, for jaywalking. He gets a thrill out of skipping in front of fast-moving vehicles. He enjoys himself for a few years in spite of friendly warnings. Up to this point, you would label him as foolish. Okay, so I don't know. The jaywalker, of course, keeps, you know, gets in call. He runs in front of a fire truck and then breaks his leg and it goes on and on and on. He just doesn't stop. And how I relate to that, I'm going to share a story with you. And I don't really share this with many people. But the one thing my mom said to me is that one thing you are, Julie, is you're not a quitter. So I keep on going. And honestly, I would sit back and think it seemed like a good idea at the time. But because of not, you know, I mean, the most irrational things. And because of not getting my powerlessness over my thinking and my drinking, I had so much shame and thought, how could I be so stupid? What was I thinking? And so by, you know, being a part of this program, it's alleviated a lot of my shame with the understanding of addiction. So when my dad had passed in Michigan, and I mean, everybody was, my whole family, they were sleeping with each other. It was just drama. It was just bad. So I come to the conclusion that I'm going to go to Vegas. I'm going to take a trip to Vegas. I'm going to leave, and I'm going to strip. Because you make $40,000 a day. That's what I heard, right? So I go, and I'm headed my merry way. You know, I leave everybody, and I'm going to Vegas. So I get to Vegas, and I find out that you have to get a pager. You have to have, like, a gig. You can't just get drunk and go, you know, have fun, because I was very promiscuous. So you had to get a pager. You had to have an act. You had to, like, find the hotel rooms where they dispatched you to. And then you had to pay up front $300 to get a license from the state of Nevada. I was like, shit, I can go get a job for all of this. You know what I mean? So the stripping thing went out the window. And I proceeded to drink and get in all kinds of trouble. And sure enough, my stepfather picks me up. He ends up putting me in a hotel and sends a flight, sends me, you know, has them. So I'm in the Riviera before, I don't know if it's still there. It's a really old school. But I literally was on a thing where you can't drink. So I was in my hotel room that was paid for, but I couldn't drink, you know, so it was kind of crazy. It was totally uncomfortable because there I'm thinking, how do I explain this? Or, you know, that dream's dead. That's not going to happen. My wealthiness is down. Now I'm down to no money and no way to get alcohol because I've got all these bouncers, you know, not allowing me to. So anyways, by the grace of God, so nothing really too traumatic happened. So I end up going back and I get in the back seat of his car and he's like, you know, and it's not the first time I've done stupid shit ever. So he gets in the car and I'm like the walk of shame sitting in the back and he's like, you know, he was a banker and pretty reasonable. He's like, what were you thinking? You know, how, you know, you go there, you get a one-way ticket, like, you know, get what were you thinking? I'm like, well, it seemed like a good idea at the time, you know, and I'm like 29 years old, and he could just see him, like, I just don't get her, you know, she's just walking dangerously around the world, and I was like 29 at the time. I mean, and I still had this idea of stripping. So anyways, that's how I relate to the jaywalker, and then as sobriety continues, I find myself doing the same thing. You know, I slip once and I keep going and I walk into this bang, 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 bang. I think by the grace of God, I am so alive right now because I don't stop. And I was intervened by this program. And when I had that spiritual awakening to understand that it was my powerlessness and there's something I can do about it, I wasn't just a bad person who wanted to strip for quick money, you know, and it just somehow relieved me and that I'm not so stupid because who does those things? Well, the jaywalker did. And now I have humor and... Yeah, so now I need to wrap it up, right? All right. So I go to, you can't see. The last, right here. Okay.
There's Fred, right?
Yeah, do you want me to do the story of Fred? Yeah. The salesman. Okay, so we will do Fred now, the salesman. And even though he was successful, and that was another thing, is I grew up in an era where everybody drank, you know, at home every night there was martinis, so it was a part of a lifestyle, which thank God isn't so happening right now. So, you know, despite being really good in school, well, not so good in school, but really successful as far as popular and a lot of activities, you know, a good family, just kind of having everything going for me, I still needed, I hope I'm relating this correctly. I still, the insecurities in my success, regardless of anything, and actually knowing better, I didn't have the concept of the 12 steps, but I knew about alcoholism, and I did not want to be an alcoholic. But regardless of all of that, I started drinking, and it took over. And I hope that relates to Fred's story.
Right, and the important thing about Fred's story is that we read about Jim, and we read about the retired dude, and we read about the jaywalker, and most of those guys had reasons to drink or reasons to jump in front of them. I mean, you know, they had an overriding compulsion to do it. And Jim, of course, you know, had all these problems with working for a place that he once owned. Now Fred's an accountant, and he doesn't have any problems. In fact, when AA first approaches Fred, He's like, well, you guys have settled your I'm glad you guys have settled your drinking problem. Blah, blah, blah. Mine is different. My drinking problem is different, and I can control it, right? And so Fred controls it for a long time. He doesn't even think about drinking. And then he goes to Washington, and he pulls off this big accounting deal. And he has this one night where he's been successful. Everybody's happy with Fred. Not a cloud on the horizon. I love that one. Not a cloud on the horizon. No problems ahead. And boom, it seems like a good time for a drink. So he's off to the races again. And I love it. What I love about his story is he's the one who got on a plane and ended up with a taxi cab driver for a couple of days, you know, until the money ran out. So. So then Fred was ready. Then Fred finally realized that he had a problem. And so when the AA dudes came and outlined the spiritual answer and the program of action, which that first 100 had followed successfully, he decided to give it a try. Yeah. Do you want to wrap that up then?
Yeah. Do you want me to read or to kind of wrap it up myself? Okay, I'm going to wrap it up myself. Sorry about the Fred story, but that's why I have Barb here. The whole thing that I have gained from this, and I've read it many times, and I just want to make sure to express this and, you know, take it or leave it, is that once I had that spiritual experience and once I learned about my powerlessness of alcoholism, it answered why I did so many stupid things. It wasn't, you know, I wasn't a bad person. I wasn't, you know, all of these things, and I definitely wasn't stupid. So now I have a choice, and for some reason, once that was lifted, I felt lovable. I felt like I could listen, and I understand it. I understood my powerlessness, and there was a solution. So I am so grateful for this program. I am so grateful for Barb keeping me online, and I'm so grateful for all of you.
Right, and I think, as Julie said, the alcoholic at certain times has no effective mental defense against the first drink. And the only way we get that defense is from a higher power. And so stay tuned till next week when we will talk about. Thank you all for being here and for listening.